big delegation today. We see all the commander-in-chief generals are here. Welcome, generals. You hope you'll also assist with your experience for this meeting to achieve what is supposed to achieve. As you can see, honorable members, the agenda is before you. Those are the items that we are going to discuss. But I will also ask honorable members that after we are done with the Department of Defense annual report, to remain so that we are going to have a workshop this weekend, so that we should give honorable members feedback about the preparations of the workshop. If it suits you, honorable members, we'll do that. Thank you very much. Do we have any apologies? Yes.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I would like to send the apology of our minister, honorable Mapisan Makula, who really wanted to be here as we present our department's annual report, but they could not be here because of the cabinet sitting this morning.
Thank you very much. Any other apology? We have an apology for Mr. Mwango, Mr. Bongo, and Honorable Messi. Thank you very much. Can we then move to item Honorable
Chair, just now that we're done with apologies, I know that you are about to begin the presentation and there's limited time. I would just like, for the purposes of the minute, to record my objection to the proceedings on three grounds. The Minister is not present, the Chief of the SANDF is not present, and we cannot possibly deal with this annual report efficiently in one meeting at a rate of approximately 14.26 billion rand per hour. I just wish to record that for the minute, and I'm sure we can then get on with the briefing. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Menia, how do you know that we cannot deal with the report even before we start dealing with it?
Yeah, Chair, I'm not sure that we've debated this at length in our last meeting. There's a difference in the committee. I believe that the annual report should be dealt with at the rate of one program per day. The majority of members differ with that, and I think that we should leave it at that and get on with the presentation. Our objection is recorded.
Thank you. We will go on with the presentation. If there is anything that we still need of that presentation, honorable members will talk about that. Honorable JJ?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, I'm really concerned about the objections before the presentation. Before we kickstart with everything, then we have an objection. But what I want to say, let us not subject the minister at the point whereby she will be limited to be part of the committee every day. No, the minister is not a member of this committee. It's a political head of the department, including this committee. Therefore, you can't subject the minister and say every time it's compulsory, even its annual report. If the team is here to present an annual report, I don't see any need, Chair, for anyone to talk about the absence or the presence of the minister. If the minister is here, then it's a blessing to us. Therefore, we'll get some additional information, if there is any. But it should not be compulsory and compel the minister to this meeting. Thank you.
Honorable, we
I wish to place on record that we officially invited the minister to come, and the minister responded by saying she, on this date, she should be in the PRC. So there was a proper communication from our side. So that is why the honourable member is correct that we discussed this before. So we'll make it a point that even in the next following meeting, we'll still extend an invitation. Thank you.
Honourable Menier, I just got reminded. The minister has been invited, and the minister has sent an apology. Now it's up to the honourable members as to whether you accept the apology or you don't accept the apology. I haven't heard that from any of you. Honourable JJ?
Jefferson, I do move that we accept the apology of the minister.
The apology accepted.
Yeah, I obviously have a different view. I think that the minister, given that this is the exceptional hearing and deals with the department's performance in the previous financial year, the minister should be present, and I don't accept her apology. What I do accept is that the minister, although she is accountable to Parliament, is not and cannot be required to attend every meeting of this committee. But I wish to point out to my honourable colleagues that since the minister's appointment, there have been, if I stand corrected, 46 meetings of this committee, and the minister, despite what is reported in the annual report, has never attended one of those.
Honourable Menier, we're talking about this meeting now. If you have problems with other meetings, I think we need to use another forum to do that. Now it's an apology. Now your objection is recorded, and the members, honourable.
Now, just second the proposal that we accept the apology.
Much, SecDef. We are now on three. Remember, Parliament is on the budget review and recommendation process, which can be to your benefit if you impress honourable members here in your presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, honourable chairperson and honourable members. I think one item, of course, that was raised, which I thought I should just mention for the record as well, is that of the presence of the chief of the SANDF, because according to the Defence Act and the PFMA, the Secretary for Defence is the accounting officer and of the department. That's why you would find the Secretary of Defence leading a delegation. But the members of Parliament, of course, we agree that they can invite anybody to this meeting, chief of the SANDF or any member of the SANDF or any member of the department or any member of the society for that matter, to come and appear before this committee. We will be presenting then the Department of Defense annual report for the financial year 13-14. Although I think we have a number of issues in the department, as you know, I think they will be handled at different times, as honorable members have indicated. Because of the limited of time, we had prepared ourselves just to limit our presentation to the annual report and our discussion. We have a team here that is attending. Maybe I should introduce the team, just the head of various departments, of various divisions and services that are here or represented here. I'll start maybe on this side.
Honorable Chairperson, Major General Roman Swana, Chief Military Policy Strategy and Planning.
Honorable Chairperson and members, my name is P.S. O'Kella, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Lieutenant General Mbata, Chief Logistics.
Honorable Chair and members. My name is Gloria Sterma. I'm the head of internal audit for the department.
Honorable Chair and members, Major General Ntoli Sipetane, Inspector General of the Department of Defense. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you can see, then we've constituted the delegation in such a way that we're able to present this annual report. As I indicated, if in future any other member is required from the Defense Force or Department of Defense to join the delegation, I'll be happy to invite them to be part of this delegation. Shall we go to the next? The aim of this presentation is that of presenting the Department of Defense on a report. In our scope, we'll cover the introduction, the mandate, the outcomes and outputs, the report structure that we have, the priorities of the minister, performance indicators, output detail, and financial performance briefly, as well as the enterprise-wide risk and mitigation actions, after which the report of the general, we shall just mention in brief, because I know that the Auditor General was here last week to present the report of the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. In terms of the introduction, I'm not going to go into details, but just to remind ourselves that we are guided by the Constitution in terms of Section 200 of the Constitution, the Public Finance Management Act, and other regulations such as the Defense Act, public regulations, and this annual report was tabled in Parliament as required by PFMA on the 30th of September, and it reflects the Department of Defense performance against the Department of Defense in terms of our annual performance plans. The mandate, as I indicated, Section 200 of the Constitution, the laws of the country is the Defense Act of 2002, and in terms of the policies, it's the policy that was developed in 1998, and for this financial year, we hope to be presenting our own report according to the Defense Review policy. When it comes to outcomes and outputs, we are to ensure as a Department of Defense that South Africa is defended and protected, that is the South African National Defense Force, and we are to enhance the civil control of defense, that is the Ministry and the Secretariat. The outputs then are to ensure that we have ordered defense commitment, that we provide the mission-ready defense capabilities, and that we provide sound defense direction and ensure defense compliance with the regulatory framework. We have structured this report according to, as I indicated, that has been presented to Parliament according to the foreword of the minister, the overview by Secretary for Defense, and the introduction of the military operations by the Chief of the SANDF. And we have all the chapters up to chapter 5, which concludes by the financial performance of the Auditor General. The ministerial priorities that we have, I'm not going to go into details with the ministerial priorities, as the members would appreciate. The ministerial priority then gets reflected in the performance of the department. So there will be a repetition. If you said these were the ministerial priorities, those ministerial priorities will then be mentioned also as part of the performance of the department. So to avoid limitation, I will discuss them in detail during the performance reports. But just to highlight those priorities, it was the ministerial priorities included the landward defense capabilities, the maritime security, the force rejuvenation, the enhancement of the SANDF's peacekeeping capability, and the National Youth Service. Now, when we also, in light of what the chairperson has indicated, that we are presenting our annual report, therefore, this is a time for us to be justifying the budget that we have received, how we have spent it, and why we think maybe is it adequate or not adequate. That has to be viewed against these priorities that I'm mentioning. In other words, do we have enough budget to rejuvenate our forces, to maintain maintain our maritime security, to maintain our landward defense capabilities, to enhance our peacekeeping operation, to operate our national youth service program for the revitalization of the reserves, for the restructuring and support of the defense industry, for the Department of Defense works capabilities. Those were the priorities that the minister has mentioned to us, and we are measured then whether do we have enough resources to implement those priorities as identified by the minister. We will then go straight now to the performances whereby, as I indicated, some of these priorities will be highlighted. We are covering these selected performance indicators in according to prescripts of the National Treasury as well as the Auditor General in terms of our reporting. We will then give the members of the committee the targets that we have set ourselves in the beginning of the financial year 13-14. We will then indicate whether did we achieve those targets or we did not achieve the targets, and then also state the reasons of whether we have achieved, underachieved, or overachieved on those targets that we have mentioned. Since it is an extensive report and we have circulated the report as well as the slides to the members of the committee prior to this presentation, with your permission, Chairperson, I would request that I just focus on the areas where we did not achieve. I would very much love to focus on the areas where we achieved so that we can pat ourselves on the back for overachievement in some of these areas. But I think for the purpose of focused discussions, I would just like us to focus on the reds, as it were. In other words, on areas, performance indicators that we did not achieve, and maybe provide explanation as to why we feel we did not achieve. We are starting on those performance indicators. The first one that we are looking at is the letter of compliance with the SADC Standby Force Agreement and the South African pledge within that as required. We have the SADC Standby Force, as we now know, headquartered in Botswana as one of the members of the SADC. All SADC member states have made commitments towards contribution to that standby force. We, in terms of force employment, were expected to provide the field hospitals to that contribution, as well as to provide the Navy combat vessels. We have not been able to achieve. Our target was to achieve 100% of this, but when we evaluate ourselves at the end of the financial year, we found that we have contributed almost up to about 80%, 79% to be exact, and the reason being that some of the we did not have enough funding for the combat vessels to be mission ready, as well as the deployed field hospital. The percentage of compliance with the number of ordered commitments. These are the commitments that we have established in the beginning of the year as our target. One of that commitment was the deployment in the Central African Republic, which we had to withdraw during the financial year for the reasons that are well known to this committee. The other target that we have set ourselves was the number of joint interdepartmental and multinational military exercises to be conducted during this year. We had committed to conduct about 9 military exercises. We could only conduct 5 military exercises because the other 4 had to be cancelled, again because of reasons beyond our control, in this particular case cancelled by the participating member states. Still on our selected performance indicators, we are looking at number of deployment hours of our air defense. We would have liked to have about 6,000 or so hours for flying hours for our Air Force, but we could only get 4,000 of those because of budget that was allocated during that financial year, as well as the maritime defense capabilities, where we had targeted 22,000 hours at sea, and our sailors could only spend 11,000 hours at sea. And this was also because of the delay in the maintenance cycles of the operation and some operational defects of our fleet in the Navy. These were some of our selected indicators that we always mention as areas of priority. We will then now go program by program in terms of achievement. We will look at the administration program, where you can get the list of those programs that are categorized as administration programs, where we have mostly achieved our targets, and where we find that we might not have achieved the target in terms of the administration is when we look at the sub-program of the policy and planning. There is an assessment tool that has been developed by the Departments of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency. It's called MCAT, which is really Management Performance Assessment Tool. According to this, all the departments in the government are expected to perform at least at the level 3, which is the acceptable level, the level 5 being more than expected, and level 4 and 5 being more than expected. Our department was assessed during this financial year by the DME MPET assessment tool, and we were found to be performing at a level of 2.4. And where we fell short, that we couldn't meet at least 3, was mostly around the area of the payment of service providers within 30 days, and around the area of having a fully functional internal audit, and also I think looking at various performance targets that we have met. So this is a program that is run by the Policy and Planning in the Secretariat. On the financial services, we might have to explain further in detail when we look at the target that we have set ourselves in terms of a defense fiscal framework status. We found that we did not meet our own fiscal framework, as it were, because according to our fiscal framework, as determined in the 1998 defense review, was that as Department of Defense, we should spend 40% of our budget on remuneration of employees, and then 30% on administration and operations, and the other 30% on capital. We have not achieved that target, and one of the main reasons is that our strength of the HR is still at the level of 78,000, whereas the defense review and allocation of the budget is far less than adequate to meet to satisfy the remuneration for the employees that we have. So we end up with a budget spent of about 54% or so on the remuneration of employees instead. We have a target of having no adverse effect in terms of the Auditor General's findings, and this time we did get a qualified audit, which we'll talk about, I think, in detail on the intangible assets, and therefore the target was not met. And the other target that was not met is that one of approval of the DoD policy regulating resource unit costing status. This policy is being reviewed in terms of policy advisors, and once it has been finalized, the policy will then be presented for approval to the policy board in terms of how do we resource all the units Protection Services, the program, that is the defense material, the areas where we have not achieved our target was that of developing the defense industry strategy, because we had thought that by then we would have concluded the defense review, because we feel the defense review should inform the defense strategy. So this is still work in progress on our part, and as well as the allocation for the main equipment. I think we have indicated before that we would like to see 30% of our budget allocated for the main equipment, and that was not achieved because less than 30% was allocated for the main equipment. The Program of Defense International Affairs has also been developing a defense foreign relations strategy. This was delayed during this financial year, as I indicated, because we were waiting for the defense review to be completed, which the defense review has to. The defense foreign relations strategy is mainly around the country's the country's foreign relations policy, as well as our strategy towards peacekeeping operations, which are all outlined in the defense review. In the program, sub-program of the Human Resource Support Services, the underachievement was in the area of a human resource retention strategy that is still being developed is in the process of being finalized by the Human Resource Division. And when it comes to the percentage of PSEP disciplinary cases finalized within 90 days in the Department of Defense, we are still facing challenges because our target is that at least 80% of our cases must be finalized within 90 days, but we are still at about 30% cases finalized within 90 days, although we are happy to report that during that financial year, all cases, disciplinary cases, were finalized, but unfortunately not as rapid or as soon or as quick as we would have liked to see them finalized. We are still in the process of the HR has been charged with developing a policy of the Armed Forces Day as the Department of Defense, what kind of an Armed Forces Day we would like to celebrate every year. As we have members have been informed before, we have decided on the February 21st, the day when Mandy was sunk, as a day of our Armed Forces Day. Now we are still developing a policy in terms of how should such a day be celebrated. We don't think that such a day should be just celebrated by the Department of Defense. We think that such a day should be celebrated by the nation as a whole, and we are consulting various stakeholders as to how do we as a society and as a nation would like to see our Armed Forces Day be celebrated and then consolidate that into an Armed Forces Day policy. When it comes to the percentage of achievement of performance in the human resource agreement, we would like to see 100% of performance agreements, especially for senior managers, signed. And we would like to see compliance with disclosures of financial disclosures as required by the PFMA as well as the Public Service Act. Up to now, we are at 88% and almost there as far as financial disclosures, because we are at 92%, but we really have to target 100% for that, and we're not going to change that target because we think everybody must, in the senior management system, disclose their financial and also their market performance management. The challenge that we have in terms of reaching 100% here, honorable members, is that some of the members of the department are deployed outside. Others, they might be deployed as defense attaches, but others have been seconded also to DECO, and others are deployed in various missions outside. So from time to time, these deployments can go up to 1 year, up to 2 years. It becomes very difficult to get everybody to sign up on performance agreements, sign up on financial disclosures, but we are working very hard to make sure that we reach that target of 100%. As I indicated, we are not going to change that target. The number of PSA attending various training programs, we are not reaching the target. It has been less than expected because, unfortunately, when these training programs come up, and there are sometimes clashes in terms of times for them to participate in those training programs. When it comes to the legal services, our target is that we should have 60% of the DOD cases in court settled in our favor. We are not there. We are almost there. We're at 45%. And there might be a reason here for us to relook into this target, because when we sign up, these cases get settled out of court. For instance, when we are involved in training programs, fire starts, and the farmers whose properties are affected by the fire take the claim to court. And when it goes to court, we obviously, as I said, declare null contender. We can't contend, because it's there for everybody to see that that fire was caused by the Department of Defense, and here it's damage done. So we then immediately, to save cost, go for settlement of that case out of court. But we record it in our books as a case against that it was settled against the Department of Defense when actually we have to find another way of saying this. It's not to say that we lost the case. The members understand what I'm trying to say. It will also be the same when it comes to the medical negligence, or shall we say, maybe we shouldn't say negligence, maybe we should say medical complications that we come across when we get to court. We find ourselves in a medical case that we have to settle if a certain member has suffered has claimed damages, so we settle those court cases out of court for those medical cases. So mostly medical cases and such damage to property cases are the ones that are most of the time ruling against us. We do have some few cases, contractual cases, and also sometimes labor relations cases that where the department is taken to court. I think we have achieved the target that we have set in the command and control area for the SNDF, in the military policy strategy and planning area. And when it comes to the inspection services, we have cases, we have set ourselves a target for auditing of cases, whereby we said for the financial year we needed to at least audit about 87 records for various areas of our operation in terms of auditing for compliance, and we only audited 83, so we underachieved. And then when it comes to the number of incidents reported for corruption and fraud detected for investigation, we are not going to change this, but we have noted that the way we have reflected here is really not an indication of underachievement. In other words, the Inspector General here set up a target that during the financial year we will investigate 25 cases of corruption and conclude those cases, and the cases that were presented to the Auditor General. But only 17 cases were presented to the Auditor General for him to investigate. They investigated all of those and concluded all of those cases. So the question is, if there were less cases of corruption reported to the Auditor, to the Inspector General for investigation, is that an underachievement or is that an overachievement? The aim is to have less cases reported because we want to fight corruption. So the way we are reporting it here is debatable whether it's underachieved or overachieved, but as an accounting officer, I've told my team it is overachieved. And then we do have the perception surveys, and these surveys are conducted throughout the year, and they cover different areas and to see members of the department and the SANDF, whether they are happy with the various areas. We wanted to conduct 47 surveys, but we only did 40 surveys as far as that is concerned. I think the sub-program of communication services did well during the financial year, and so did the sub-program of corporate staff, and as well as the sub the religious services. On the religious services, there was a target actually to provide chaplains to the DOD so that we fill up at least 93% of the post of the chaplain services to be filled. But during the financial year, on the average, only 90% of the post were filled, and that's reported as an underachievement. Another underachievement in the religious services has been that of a number of meetings with prospective religious advisory boards, where the target was 3, but only 2 such meetings took place. For the defense reserves, the expenditure of the budget of the defense reserves was 94% instead of 100%. Due to contractual obligations for hired equipment that is paid via financial authorities. In other words, not all of the budget was spent, 100% of the budget was spent. And when it comes to promoting of the reserve system to the DOD and all other stakeholders, there were a number of provincial defense liaison council structures that were supposed to be established across the country, across all 9 provinces. I think they have done well, but they have not reached all the 9 provinces. They've only reached 7. The defense reserves have these provincial liaison councils in 7 provinces instead of 9 provinces. Also still under the defense reserves, they intended to have 5 members of the defense reserve participating in conferences, especially the one in New York, but only 3 members participated. For the defense foreign relations, the defense foreign relations had put a budget aside to visit our defense attachés internationally. But because of the decision that was consciously taken by the department to cut down on the expenditures in keeping with the National Treasury constrained measures, we decided that for this financial year, we will not undertake such visits. So although we planned for 10 visits, no visits were undertaken. Although there was a budget for it, that budget was not spent, because for this financial year under review, the DOD taken a decision that such foreign visits will not be undertaken in order to save costs. We will then take a decision whether for this or the coming financial year such visit should be taking place. We will be weighing the budget versus the requirements in that regard. When it comes to the false employment, you will then notice that in whatever division that we are talking about, whether we were discussing the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, when it comes to the area of the force design, the force structure, the information that we have agreed with the National Treasury and the Auditor General is that we will record it as that information classified. But this information is available to the security cleared members of the Auditor General, and the Auditor General does audit us in the information that appears in our annual report has classified that information is made available to the Auditor General, just for explanation. But for peace support operations, we were looking at the number of ordered commitments that we wanted to deploy, as I indicated, not achieved because of the Central African Republic battle of Bangui. And then the number of planned exercises, again, because of others, had to be cancelled by the participating partners. And for the landward defense, the compliance with the training. Again, when it comes to training in the South African National Defense Force, members will notice that throughout, maybe except for SAMS, South African Military Health Services, all other services were not able to achieve the number of training that were budgeted for this year, and mainly because of the deployment of our forces. Most of the time you find that when it is time to go for training, the member supposed to be going for training might find himself or herself deployed in other operations and therefore not able to take up that training opportunity that had come. As a result, then you will find that throughout the services, on the training side, you will notice that the number of training hours or training courses that were supposed to be attended were not achieved because of that reason that I've explained. For the Air Force, they achieved the less than achievement was also in the area of training. For the maritime, the compliance, again, the less achieved target was in the area of training. The military health service was the only service that was able to achieve their target, including in the training. So was the defense intelligence services. The joint logistics, now when we're looking at the support programs, the area where the target was not reached was in the codification of our equipment. We are, as you know, in the process of registering all the assets of the Department of Defense, both the immovable assets, the movable, tangible assets, and the intangible assets. We have done well in that regard, but we haven't reached where we want to be, and we are reporting now that work is in progress in terms of ensuring that our assets registered at the Department of Defense is complete. Also, in terms of the disposal of our material, this we would have liked to have disposed of at least 75% of all the requests to have been that we received for disposal to be disposed by the chief of by the Joint Logistics Services, and that was not achieved because only 73% of that was disposed during this financial year. Also, still with the Joint Logistics Services, the training target for the Joint Logistics Division was not reached for reasons that have been mentioned earlier on. For the military police, I think, although I know it's green, but I think it's important to note that we have been having difficulty in the military police in terms of the backlog of cases not being concluded by the South African police services, because our military police and the South African police services, they work together. So during this financial year, to attend to that case of backlogs, we decided to call on the reserves to come and assist. So our reserves work with our military police as well as with SAPS. As a result, most of alleged criminal cases were able to be processed by the South African Police Services with our military police assistance. The projected number of deliberate crime prevention operations, we would have liked to undertake 242, and during this year, we undertook 227. So that concludes that part of the presentation in terms of our plan, targets, and achievements. But I think now in these slides, we are just highlighting that the planned targets, we had thought we would have liked to have achieved at least 84%, but we achieved 72% of our target, and where we didn't achieve the target is 28. But also, I think we have to disclose to this committee that the way we have categorized our targets has really been as requirement by the Department of National Treasury, and then the Auditor General comes in and audits us in terms of compliance with the rules and regulations set up by the Department of National Treasury. And because also from time to time we're being informed by both National Treasury and Auditor General that if your budget is being cut, if your budget is being reduced, then you must set your targets according to the budget that you receive. So although we might be praised for having reached most of the targets that we have set ourselves, but we need to be aware, I think, as a portfolio committee and as lawmakers of the country as well, that those targets that we have set, we had to reduce our ambition or reduce our target in order to meet the budget. But that does not mean that the mission itself as a whole has been completely fulfilled. A good example is that kind of deployment of our forces along the borders. If we are asked today, when you look at the annual report says that our target was to deploy 13 companies. Our annual report will say that, yes, we have met the target of deploying 13 companies, but we know that we need 22 companies to be deployed across our borders to ensure that our borders are not porous. So as the accounting officer, I can't sit here and assure the members and say our borders are not porous because we have met our target of deploying forces across the border. We need to deploy 22 companies. We have only deployed 13, and I'm reporting that we have met our target because we have reduced our target from 22 to 13 because of the budget that is allocated to us. And as lawmakers, you might like to advise us whether I should keep 22 and keep on reporting that I'm not meeting my target, or you are happy by me meeting my target while our borders are still porous. In terms of the financial performance, I think the full financial performance, of course, is reflected in the annual report that was distributed. But here, we are highlighting the fact that we indicate all the expenditure according to various programs in terms of from administration to the various services, and that on the total, for the budget that was allocated to the Department of Defense for this financial year, 13-14, we spent 40,447,521. And which amounts to 99.8%. So as a Department of Defense, we spent 99.8%. We did not spend 0.2%. And according to the accounting standards, that is an acceptable level of expenditure. I'm told by my CFO and internal audit executive that if I have spent within a deviation of plus or minus 5%, the expenditure is acceptable. So I then disclose to the audit committee that our expenditure for that financial year was acceptable. Of course, take subject to the vehemence that occurred during that year that I highlighted there, especially if we found that we did not have enough money for the remuneration of employees in the administration and other areas, we had to take money from other operations and administration projects and take them into the to cover the compensation of employees. So this is what we call the environments which are shown here, even in the next slides, in details, compensation of employees, goods and services, the households, as well as various military assets. Just to look at the challenges that we faced during the year in terms of our budget and our funding, these are the areas that we faced in our slide 55, where I am now, that we had challenges in terms of a shortfall in compensation of employees. We had to get funds from some other program to meet the target. Procurement of critical ammunition, mainly because of the Battle of Bangui, whereby we ended up having to, as well as our peacekeeping operations in the DRC, the Force Intervention Brigade, FID, which for that given financial year required more critical ammunition than we had done. As members would then be aware, when we use this, when we prepare the force for the Force Intervention Brigade and other deployment, now that by the end of the financial year we had been requested to prepare our forces to participate in the ASRIC, that is the African Capacity for Rapid Response to Crisis, we also had to then prepare more forces and use more ammunition, mainly in training. That presented a challenge in terms of our budgeting. But we also had a challenge for the critical requirement of our maintenance and repair of operational vehicles, because the deployments in various peacekeeping operations, including the maritime security, the deployment in the Mozambican Channel, meant that the equipment, the military equipment, were exposed to services that were not budgeted for, and that presented a budget in terms of the repairs of those vehicles and both in terms of landward vehicles and aircrafts and maritime vehicles, as well as in the area of tactical radios for communication. The procurement of deployable medical posts and field hospitals is something that is down in our requirements, but that we are still struggling to get a budget for. The next part of our presentation, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, it deals with the risks that we are required, I think, as part of our annual report to present to this committee. What have we identified as our major risks, especially the top five or the top 10 risks, the major and what we do to mitigate those risks. We have mainly the unavailability and access to accurate business performance information. That's why we are now reviewing our information strategy. The unreliability of the DoD performance information. Here, it mostly reflects to our standard operating procedure that we set up, that they have to be captured also as part of our and reflected in our financial management, and that they drill down to the unit and the base level to the directorates. So we have now embarked upon the action plan to address the asset, mainly in terms of the asset management, as well as in terms of our operation. The fraud and corruption in the Department of Defense is highlighted as one of the major risks, and we are working closely with the National Treasury to implement the supply chain management and the instruction note on the from the National Treasury. And also we are implementing, as the Department of Defense, we have developed and adopted our own corruption and fraud prevention plan that we are now in the process of implementing. And the issue of litigation is one of the risk areas for the department, and both, as I indicated, in terms of labor relations, but also in terms of contractual engagement. And this has, as we have indicated, we are working on getting the reserve force to join our Defense Legal Services Division in order to assist us with the litigation cases. The issue of intellectual property was highlighted as the issue, by the Auditor General, as the issue where we have been qualified, and this relates to the intangible assets, and that we have now, as I indicated, set up a system to register the intangible asset registry. And also the empowerment of the defense industry, as I indicated, we're working closely with, we have set up the implementation of the defense review. The next aspect of our presentation briefly covers the report of the Auditor General. We, I think, have good news and bad news in terms of our audit report. The good news is that up to now, we have been getting qualified audit on our tangible assets. Tangible assets, we mean immovable assets like our properties. We mean major assets like our transports, weapons system, as well as the other major assets. And for the first time now, after we have been fully audited by the Auditor General, we have unqualified audit on all our tangible assets for this year. The only qualified audit we got was on intangible assets. Now, I think the members will agree with me that it is a difficult area. Intangible, I mean something that you cannot tangible, touch, somebody, something that is somewhere in somebody's mind somewhere, like intellectual property. And so now we are told that now your intellectual property registered. Right now, I mean, some members of the department are we're having a defense cooperation meeting in Pretoria with the United States. And yesterday I then hosted the Assistant Secretary of Defense from the United States, responsible for the Africa region. And I was telling her this, that I'm going to Parliament tomorrow, and I'll be telling them that I have unqualified audit on the tangible assets, but I have unqualified audits on these intangible assets. And they were saying, wow, you are more advanced than the United States, because our books in the United States are unauditable for the Department of Defense. Our assets are unauditable. We just audit the programs. So I would say to the members of the committee, the department has achieved a lot in terms of ensuring that we have an unqualified audit. The department is not happy that the Auditor General has qualified us on the intangible assets, especially because our intellectual property is the custodian of AMSCO. AMSCO is the one that acquires and develops our military systems, and therefore should be keeping the record of the money, the value that of intellectual property or intellectual investment that we make in developing these weapons systems. We will be then working very closely with AMSCO, and we have engaged with PricewaterhouseCoopers. We are told that they are the one of the best companies when it comes to intellectual property audits. And there are not many companies in South Africa really that can can go to the intellectual property auditing processes, and that we hope that for this current financial year, 2014-2015, we will be able to present a registry and an audit process of unqualified audit, including the intangible, the assets that you cannot touch. Intangible assets, we call them. In conclusion, we have performed substantially well against our plan. The challenge we still experience, we will continue to experience through, and we will address them through developing effective implementation of our annual performance plan, and also by various policy intervention once the defense review begins to be implemented. I'm happy to hear that the portfolio committee will be holding a workshop this weekend where the defense review will be debated, discussed, and probably adopted and recommended for adoption to, by the parliament. And the interactions with Auditor General of South Africa, the National Treasury, and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the presidency will continue to take place to ensure that the Department of Defense performance is aligned and compliant with all the required legislative frescoes. I thank you.
Thank you, Secretary of Defense. You're done. I hope, or I wonder how is the committee going to assist you to make intangible asset tangible asset. Very difficult, and I wonder as to whether it was always a standard of auditing. And I also understand you are modest not to heap praises on yourself about your achievement, but should always indicate to us, I think you have done that, as to out of 100%, how many percentage has been achieved. I think that has been communicated. Honorable members, over to you to interact with the report. Honorable Munisi, Honorable Whip, DG, Honorable JJ, raise your hand. Don't say. Honorable Isau, in that order. You want to give over to your colleague. Honorable Minia. Honorable Munisi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity given. Then I also thank the presentation from the department. Maybe, Chair, starting on the AG's report, our department have received a qualified audit opinion. Then, Chair, I won't separate the tangible and the intangible. We are looking forward to the department to get a clean audit opinion report. Chair, there is a concern on the side of the department for not achieving all set targets in different programs and sub-programs and other key performance indicators. I also noticed the dramatic reduction in the number of targets compared to 2012-13, and the percentage of budget spent versus percentage of budget achieved, because the whole budget is spent and not all targets were achieved. Chairperson, I'm also serving in the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. That makes me to understand a lot of issues regarding our borderline. I know exactly how serious it is and our borders are really porous, then the deployment of the SANDF back to borderlines resulted in noticeable number of interception of various illegal activities and great improvement of security of our borders. And I would like to commend the achievement of our department in terms of land borderlines control, and would like to know, Chairperson, if there is any plan to expand this. Chair, on page 15 of our annual report, that is the output 2.2, regional security. The self-sustainment of personnel in terms of regional deployment is essential for mission success. Then I would like to know what are the reasons for the department not to achieve this target. Projection was 100%, achieved is 83%. There is also improvement, Chairperson, in terms of litigation in favor of department as compared to previous financial year. However, the percentage achieved is still low. I just want to check from the department if there are any plans to further improve the low percentage of success rate in court. What plans of cases has the department lost? What types of cases that the department have lost? Maybe if I can get clarity on that. And Chair, I would like to know, why is the number of grievances that remain unresolved so high? That is 644. And what does the temporary suspension relate to, and what can be done to ensure a speedy finalization of this? And Chair, in the question of the engineers, why were no engineers and only one air crew member appointed in 2013-14? I think, Chair, as a committee, we need clarity on this question, since the DOTs sponsored a number of engineering students at various tertiary institutions around the country, and also train its own air crew. Do the department have any plan to absorb these learners? On the sources of revenue, Chair, for the DOD, that has increased annually since 2010. The sale of goods and services other than capital assets. I would like to know, Chair, if you can get an explanation from the department of what constitutes such goods and services. And my last question, Chair, is a clarity-seeking question on a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and what effective steps will be taken maybe to prevent this in future. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Gameda, you are next.
Thank you, Chair. I first appreciate the presentation as given, but then also piggyback on what my honorable minister said about
qualified audits, that say the department comes to us for budgets and then we approve as a committee. Just to add that when the time comes that they have to give reports, we expect firstly a clean audit, orderly and unqualified. So I was really happy on that first. Secondly, I heard the sector speaking about being read on MPET, but maybe he could give some more convincing reasons, you know, why service providers are not paid in 30 days. And this affects us, this affects SMMEs, this leads them to liquidation and so on. I think that's the policy of government that was made long time ago. And I think most departments are achieving this now. Also, another question is that you did not set annual targets for a number of adverse audit findings when you had your targets. You just had a zero. Could there be a reason for that? On your output two on training capability and not meeting the target, what is the recruitment criteria? Any assessment done to learners so that they don't leave the training or they sort of underachieve so that then that leads to your underachievement? The same thing applies also on maritime human resources and training. That's almost the same reason I gave you. Also, maybe the sector could once more explain why he says there is an achievement on military health services. Will that coincide with what we could go outside? If you go to any hospital, military hospital, will you find medication there or what have you? The other issue, which has been raised also by the AG, is the issue of contracts that were signed, then cancelled, some reinstated. The reasons given there, there is the issue that whether AMSCO was applying this preferential 25%. My concern, I'm sure it will be the major concern of the committee, that this was intended to benefit SMMEs and especially HDIs. Can you give us the convincing reasons why maybe we should in future also ask the Auditor General about this? Why stop HDIs from advancing into economic activity? Because that leads to that. Also, on the annual report on the Auditor General, on your page 210, there's quite a good list of irregular expenditure, and these are under investigation. Could you, you know, take us blow by blow on those, so that we could have a sense, because some of them are so, you know, unclear that no declaration of interest could be provided. So all those on page 210, if you could go blow by blow, there's deviation from bidding process, deviation from payment processes, because all these things are done by people who are competent to do these things. Why would they do that? So I'll ask you to do a blow by blow. On the issue of contracts, which I nearly forgot, is the issue of jets. Jets, they fall part of the contracts, and maybe you could even talk about the
so-called VIP jets for the president, if you have that, because this committee had asked AMSCO about this, and AMSCO said DOD is best suited to talk about this. Also on page 2011, on the analysis of current and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you could also go blow by blow for us to understand properly. I'm more concerned about overpayments of suppliers because there's a quotation and so on, it's gone, then approved, but at the same time there's overpayment. But all of them, if the sector could go through. I think we've asked this question about the increase of the salary of the members before, and we linked it some years back when there was an increase for members or soldiers, which was not in the budget. I'm sure SecDef can explain what is the way forward, because this reflects badly on the audits. I'll stop there, Chair. I'll come back for the second one.
Honorable Skosana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me also welcome the presentation. And I must say, on a request by the presenter, whether we are happy or unhappy on your work that you are doing. No, I'm happy. We are happy, in fact. We can't say everything is bad. There are things that you delivered as expected. There are things that you achieved, and there are things that you did not achieve. The only thing that I want is a turnaround strategy on dealing with those issues. If ever you can go deeper and say this one and this one, this is how we're going to deal with. But Chair, nevertheless, I'm a little bit concerned about the legal services. In fact, on issues related to legal services, the cases in the department. Why so many cases? If you say 81 people, those are the cases of the cases within the department, that one per annum. There is huge, that number is a problem, and it's having an impact on the human resource. That's why I always say job creation is a priority in our government. Why so many cases? And I just want to check the mechanisms put in place to prevent this such number of cases within the department per annum. And secondly, Chair, the steps to be taken in order to prevent the corruption within the department, because it's within our policies as government that will never tolerate a corruption. Hence, there are those who feel that corruption or it's a nice thing or whatever, they just do it. But what are the plans in preventing this? Really, we must do something about corruption. We're not laughing about the corruption. As we have outlined in our manifesto that we'll deal with corruption, even here we must get a sense of what steps and how are we going to prevent this thing not to happen within our department. Thank you very much, Patty. I sympathize with you with intangible, but anyway, I can even see that you got qualified because of intangible. But we'll go around and guess what is this intangible, and it must be tangible in order to allow us to get an unqualified statement. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. Let me begin by thanking the Secretary of Defense for the presentation, and also his frank input on the targets prescribed by National Treasury. I've long thought that the targets are designed to obscure, and it's precisely for that reason that there is a huge variance between the Department of Defense's annual report, which suggests that many things are going swimmingly, and the defense review, which says that the Department of Defense is in a critical state of decline. So thank you for that. And I do think that we have to relook and be more critical of the targets and the performance information. Chair, I've got a couple of questions. Let me begin with the issue of underspending. Now, it's always a mystery to me about how much money the Defence Force actually has and how much money it actually spends. Now, my reading of the annual financial statements reflected on page 28 of the annual report is that there was an underspend of approximately 210 million rand, which as a proportion of the total budget is relatively minor. But the question is, what is the total reserve in the special defense account? And what proportion of that reserve is committed, and what proportion of that reserve is uncommitted? Because at least in July of this year, the total balance in the SDA was 3.4 billion rand. Now, if one adds, I would suggest, the total underspending reflected in the financial accounts with the total reserve in the total balance, I beg your pardon, in the SDA, then I think you will have a more accurate picture of the total underspend in the Department of Defense, which I would suggest is much more significant than the annual financial statements reflect. So that's the first question. The second question, Chair, deals with force employment. I'm less interested in whether the Department of Defense can count than whether the Department of Defense can fight. That is my primary interest. Let's deal with force employment. On the Landward program, I think the Secretary of Defense was perfectly frank, and I thank him for that, for conceding that what we require in order to safeguard our borders is 22 subunits, not 13 subunits. I wonder if you could quantify that. How many soldiers do we require? How many soldiers do we have? And what is the variance between the two? My back of the envelope calculation would suggest that at least, based on your analysis, we must be at least 1,500 soldiers short on our landward borders. That's the first question. The second question deals with the maritime program. Now, what is intriguing about the maritime program is that if you look at page 11 of the annual report, we spend approximately, I think, 90% of the budget, but we only use 50% of the hours. Now, I wonder if you could provide us with more particulars about why that is the case, because what the statistics show is that the South African Navy is effectively alongside. I wonder if you could give us more particulars on that. And then, as a subsection of that question, if you could explain why in August 2014 the tender for the refit of R-102, the submarine, was withdrawn. On the maritime side, it appears to me that based on the statistics and based on the Arms Corps tender bulletin, South African Navy is effectively alongside. Then, Chair, let me deal, and I'm sure that the Secretary of Defense has anticipated this, our old favorite acquisition. My honorable colleague is correct. we traversed this with Arms Corps. And there were a number of acquisition projects which we discussed with Arms Corps, which Arms Corps suggested the Department of Defense would be better prepared to deal with. The first acquisition project is the acquisition project of the VIP jets, which Arms Corps told us there was a project. They were not able to provide us with the project name, the current status of that project, or the allocated budget to that project, and in fact suggested there was no project, that in Arms Corps that project was still in DoD, presumably under the acquisition arm. I wonder if we could have a current update on that. Then particularly, I think, another acquisition project, there were several lessons learned, presumably out of our terrible experience in the Battle of Bangui. One was, and it is common cause between government and opposition, that the Department of Defense requires an airlift capability. What concerned me was when we traversed this issue with Arms Corps, Arms Corps said there was no acquisition project for transport aircraft. That project resides with the Department of Defense. And it suggests that if there is an acquisition project, it is in its early stages, and that is a major concern. So I wonder if you would provide us with the particulars in respect of the transport aircraft. Then I think an aspect of the Battle of Bangui, which is, has probably not sufficiently surfaced, and with respect, Chair, is symbolized by this helmet, is the state of the equipment available to our ordinary soldiers. Our soldiers, Chair, in the DRC are having are required to use, frankly, substandard equipment. Substandard boots, substandard webbing, substandard armor, substandard helmets. And I think that is symbolized by this helmet, which if you take a close look at it, frankly, is a piece of rubbish in my view. Now, what I'd like to know from the Secretary of Defense, is there a project underway in the Department of Defense to assess and review the kit worn and used by ordinary soldiers? Because in the DRC now, our soldiers are purchasing their own knee pads, their own webbing, their own gloves, their own glasses, because they do not have the proper equipment. And we, I think, as Parliament, have a duty to make sure that they do have the proper equipment. That then takes me on to the second last section, which is the whole question of my request for an investigation and an audit by the Auditor General into Cabinet's top gun, the Honourable Lindiwe Sisulu's use of the Gulfstream jets when she was Minister of Defence. Now, what concerns me, Chair, is that I asked for that investigation 7 months ago. As of last week, the Auditor General confirmed that for at least 7 months, possibly less, but for several months, the department have been resisting handing over the documents relevant to that investigation to the Auditor General. And I would like the Secretary of Defense to explain why that is. All the evidence suggests that the Department of Defense are resisting that audit, and we know why the Department of Defense are resisting that audit, because the finding is going to be negative and deeply embarrassing to the Minister. My last question, then, Chair, relates to irregular expenditure, and again talks to the question asked by my colleague. I would like a detailed explanation about the line item sourcing of aircraft, where I think
think about 160 million rand in irregular expenditure was identified. In respect of exactly what does that refer to? What is the company name? What is the contract? What kind of aircraft were envisaged? The specifics and the particulars. Chair, that brings me to the end of my questions, but just I would like to make one comment, which is not directed at the Secretary of Defense. The Auditor General presented us with a report last week. The Auditor General was unable to reply to a number of questions and agreed to furnish us with replies in writing. We have not received those replies, Chair. Can you confirm that you have not received those replies? And if that is the case, what is being done?
Thank you very much, Honorable Sam.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'd like us to refer to page 86 for the HR issues in the annual report. Page 86 tells us very clearly, Honorable Chair, what is the plan staff complement for the defense. And of course, we look at the actual and we see it is oversubscribed clearly by 1,390. And if we go through the list, we can see the areas of concern where there are not enough feet on the ground. For instance, the army itself. The army's plan actually at 38,000, but we've got an actual of 40,000, which is oversubscribed. But in terms of the report of the Secretary of Defense, we need more people, we need more companies, we need 22. So I'm looking at those figures, and if you go through the list, then one can actually see where there is less, like in the Air Force, there's critical staff that is less. We can go further down and we can see also the legal division, where there's now an indication that the reserves will be called in, those legal practitioners from that side. And we can go down to this, we see these areas, and of course, while we have also the audit findings, if we look at the bottom, we see the internal audit division, the planned one, there's actually zero for the internal, and we only have two people appointed. Now, the people appointed, we have the head of internal audit. That's one person. I think that was appointed at the beginning of the financial year then. But we find that most of the findings were actually linked to lack of performance and capacity of the internal audit division. Most of those issues of where internal controls had to be looked at, where quality assurance had to be looked at, information that was used, performance targets that were set, all those things were lacking. So clearly, if we look at the staff complement, now the staff complement is vetted first by the DPSA, and then, of course, Treasury looks at the funding proposal of funded posts. So we have a serious problem here that critical positions cannot be filled because the planned complement here that is funded is totally inadequate for what the department needs. Now, also Treasury has indeed given us an indication. There was a Treasury prescript or instruction given that defense should be reduced by 10,000. Now, that has not been done. There's just natural attrition. There is, of course, negotiated severance packages for PSAP members, which all under DPSA, and, of course, people that die, people that move out, and we find that when we look at this, those who fill critical posts leave more than those that are appointed. So the department is heading actually for a serious problem of capacity and competency in running all the divisions in the defense. And I think this needs a serious look by the senior management and leadership of this department. And that's why it's important that ministers should also be here, because this is very critical for us. And I think if we look at those figures given here, I've got a great concern that these things have not been thought through and critical positions have been overlooked and that we will have problems going ahead into the future. So there's a political will that needs to be exercised, which we don't see. The other one is we continue, we know that the percentage is about 53% of personnel costs. Now, that is not the ideal situation, but the department needs to deal with this and advise us how they're working towards it, because we're not seeing that movement in that direction. On page 88, it is clearly illustrated to us, highly skilled supervision, highly skilled production, and skilled. That is where we look at most of the cost, and that's where we have our most of our problems as well. I want to proceed then to, if we look at competency and, of course, capacity issues, we can see also the posts that were upgraded. Now, there is no post downgraded. But I find that also in the same report, we speak about demotions. Now, I don't know if demotions mean a post downgrading, or does a demotion simply mean you got a different position, but your salary remains the same. I don't know if it's over the salary downgrade or just a position downgrade. In the same report, it is spoken about. So the vacancy rate at this moment is 11.31%, but the planned staff is 77,317. The actual that we have is 78,707, so how can we have a vacancy rate? The only vacancy rate that exists then are in those critical posts that need to be filled. Now, we've got a problem. It doesn't balance. It doesn't reconcile. And Treasury would have a problem with this. So the other one that we have is, of course, so I've got a great concern about these contradictions that we have within the report. And I just want to move on to, let me just see the other page. Yeah, female, male, okay, we got that here. That's fine. The issue of leave policy. Now, there are three issues on page 101 that are raised. One is non-utilization, which means it's a payout. Other one is discounting of leave. And the third one is termination of service. When you end, you paid any balance that is left. I just want to know, in other parts of government, there's a policy that simply says use it or lose it, and a time frame is set to it. No cost to the department. And I think that needs to be looked in, because if we look at the cost attached to it, the total amount we're looking at is 159 million. So policies, I think policies need to be looked at, how we deal with that. Considering the HIV/AIDS, page 102, and that stretches right over to 105. Yeah, 105. The question I want to ask is, I would like to have a status report on the matter. What is the infection rate and what are the impacts on the performance of the Army? Or the defense in general. The other one is on page 105. I'd like to know specifically dismissals, and there's 20% of the disciplinary hearings. 20% are dismissals. Now, what are the actual causes? What have they done that made the department make that decision to dismiss them from the force completely? The grievances, I'm not sure if I can calculate correctly, number of grievances resolved and numbers of grievances not resolved. 139 plus 644. And I get total number of grievances lodged, 368. Somehow, I maybe my calculator, but maybe that's just an error. That must be looked at, please. The other one is, of course, on page 106, is precautionary suspensions. And this comes at a huge cost. A huge cost. And there's a number of them that's actually longer than a year. And it's costing the department 7,616,000. Now, the number of people suspended is 41. Number of people whose suspension exceeded 30 days is 40. Average number of days suspended is 252. So it's costing the department a lot, and we can see that the legal capacity is lacking in the department to deal with the issues. We would make a huge saving by appointing more people to actually do the job, and we can see the saving at 7 million. We can employ more people to actually do it, and it would be a saving to the department. So this is a concern for me, that we have a number of litigations, the pay suspensions, disciplinary matters outstanding, that's coming at a cost. And the sooner it is resolved, the better for the department in saving on that type of expenditure, which, if it lingers on, it can only dent the budget. The other one we have is training. I think we need further explanations of the training. What actually causes were offered that those learners did not respond to? That was it sufficiently advertised? And secondly, why have learners dropped out or removed from courses after there's supposed to be a pre-screening first before they actually do a course? A pre-screening, skills audit check, everything, you go through the soft skills, you make sure the learner is competent enough, and if not, there's a bridging course that precedes the actual course, so that we have maximum or optimum performance in the course and also success in the course. So I think, I'm not sure if those screening processes are very effective, and that's actually causing also learners to actually not complete the course. The one on page 108 deals with fatalities, and it's, although it's 2%, it's 11 people that died or that were very seriously injured, say multi-organ or organ failure and death. If we can just have an idea of 11 people that have died in the defense, what are the actual causes and how that actually happened? I think our colleagues did mention the audit findings. I would like us to refer to those audit findings of the audit committee, where there's a clear acknowledgement also of the accounting officer. Defense Secretary also indicates a lack of comprehensive internal controls. There's a lack of information that speaks to targets. The Secretary reports it, the audit committee reports it, the AG reports it, and I don't think I want to accept only intangible assets as an audit finding that causes this to be a qualified audit. I believe there are a number of issues that speak to governance, to leadership, to controls that needs to be addressed, and we need to be assured, because at this moment the internal controls and internal audit is not fully functional. So it poses a serious questions going ahead and how that is going to be dealt with. So I'd like those issues that are addressed in the report, although there's some explanation, I don't believe, I think we need to know much more than that. And although there's been an improvement, we've seen the improvement, and we want to congratulate the department for achieving that, but they are always concerned, and we want to, of course, eliminate any of those audit findings so that we can have an unqualified report. I think our colleagues also mentioned, I would like to, page 236, the department just to explain to us the contingent liabilities. If we look at page 236, which is in the addenda, yeah. Now, these environmental liabilities, I know it is being dealt with, but it's issues that are of concern for us. How do these things actually happen? What measures have been put in place? It's contamination and rehabilitation, aviation fuel underground contamination rehabilitation, bitumen contamination at Air Force bases. Now, which this speaks to issues of health and safety hazards, and what are the policies that must be followed to ensure that we prevent such things from happening. So I think then I want to also speak about the mention briefly of issues of potential irrecoverable deaths. And that is on page 214. Page 214, there's a list of names given there, Honorable Chair, if we look at that. And I think we just need to understand. We have here also the issue of staff debtors, okay, which is 2,586,000. Then we've got other debtors, which is listed at 11 million. And then we got claims against the department at 12,621,000. What are those issues really? And when we say, of course, it's potential irrecoverable debt, which means that's a loss to the department and money that will be wasted. The other one is, of course, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think that's page 211. And then page 209 to 210, irregular expenditure. Those my colleagues asked if we can refer to those pages and explaining that. And then we're looking at also unauthorized expenditure on page 203, 11.3, other debtors, unauthorized expenditure not approved by Parliament and to be written off. Now, I'm not clear about that. If we look at page 203, now that sounds, normally normally there's condonement that takes place and it's brought before Parliament, and then the matter is resolved by Parliament. But here we say unauthorized expenditure not approved by Parliament and to be written off. 147 million. There's a number of issues under it, I can understand that, but I just want to know what is this about, and when we say unauthorized expenditure not approved by Parliament, it has to follow a process, and was it brought before Parliament, and Parliament didn't approve it. Okay, that is page 203. The staff debtors again on page 202, and debts written off again on page 200. And then we've got other material losses written off on page 199. Page 199, other material losses written off. Nature of losses is a settlement. Sundry losses, motor vehicle losses, other claims against the state, which I expect that is the department, which is 14,671,000. That is just the legal fees. The claims is 3,486,000. And then we've got fruitless and wasteful expenditure that is standing at 20,000 in this instance. Can we just get some idea of 22 million that has been written off? If that is the case, and we're always looking for money. Okay, the other one is, I'm not going to speak to the AXA, I've already mentioned AXA, the audit committees. Yes, the planned visits to defense attaches. It's supposed to be 10 planned visits. No visits took place because there was no authorization given. And this is a concern. We raised that also in our meetings before about defense attaches and embassies and consulates. Who actually monitors and evaluate and assess their performance? And by not authorizing not even a single visit, we have actually no idea of what the performance is of a defense attaché. Now, it is in our interest as Parliament that we don't only have oversight of the executive in South Africa, but anything that comes from this executive and even just outside the country. We have a right to know about it. We like to know the performance. And in terms of our policy of economic growth, job creation, etc., is that actually adding value to those particular priorities of government and the outcomes that we, of course, desire? That's defense attaché. The litigation matters. Yes, I would like to know, as our colleagues, more details on the litigation matters. And we say we won 60% in our favor, which is 23 over 31, which we didn't achieve of the 23 out of 31. That's overachievement. If you call it an overachievement, as the defense secretary say, you wouldn't like litigation matters. You like to avoid it at all costs. But nonetheless, there's a number of other cases as well against the department. Now, in the assessment of the Secretary of Defense, would that be in favor from understanding the nature of the cases, the briefing done by the legal team? And if not, what are the projected costs that we can possibly look at? I know there may be settlements, there may be other things, but I'm worried about the contingency that needs to provide it for litigation. The issue of corruption and fraud, I think we'd like to know some more details of those cases. I understand it is 37 cases, 17 were actually dealt with or investigated, 20 of them were referred, and then of course the target that was set was 25 cases. So yes, the department is realistic that those issues will happen in every other department. We must minimize it. And the issue is, what is the nature of the cases that we have in front of us, the type of fraud and corruption within the department? Yeah, I think there's a big concern that we have, and I think it's quite correct from the department to look at the works formation on page 14. We look at the capital and the refurbishment projects, which is at 22% and the other one at about 68% from the Department of National Public Works. Now, there's been serious delays there, and it causes the problem also a number of headaches. Now, in terms of the service level agreement between the department and Department of Defense, has any pressure been exercised on the Department of Public Works to improve on that delivery, particularly in light of the nature of this department and the role this department plays in this country and protecting this country and its involvement in the region, in the continent, internationally. And if they undermine, of course, the Department of Defense, it impacts on a number of other initiatives. Has any pressure been exercised by the minister and by the department to improve that relationship, that there is priority also given to this department and the role they play in this country? My issue here, I've got a big concern, is medical care from SAMHS. 50%, there's a target of medication of 50%. I don't know how you can put medication at 50%. If our soldiers need medication, they need medication. 50% is not the target, which means you don't provide, it's totally insufficient. Half the time you won't have the medication. Now that I feel is, what are we doing to our soldiers? The other one is the footprint of our medical facilities accommodate 3,200 people. We have military vets, that's about 850,000. And we got a contingency of almost 80,000 soldiers. The medical footprint is totally inadequate. What plans? And we can see there's critical staff shortages which impact. And therefore, when you start outsourcing, Honorable Chair, the cost only increases to the department instead of decreasing. So we got number of challenges in that area of healthcare for our soldiers and for those who have served before as military vets. So we've got a concern there of going ahead, what plans are in place to look at that particular footprint. I see the additional funding on page 25, where proposals are put in, and of course what has been granted by National Treasury is totally ridiculous. We can see that the department will not be able to meet its commitments and also what it plans to do. So this just also explains the urgency of the defense review that we need to undertake to look at all those areas of concern, because it's definitely not being addressed. I would like to raise the issue in the funding that we have where it's unauthorized spending by the accounting officer. In the salaries that are provided. Normally, there's a process that's followed with the National Treasury for additional funding. And that is done, and there's approval, prior approval. If not, there's a prior understanding that the matter will be considered and considered favorably, and that on that basis, properly, the department can proceed. But because otherwise, it remains a debt, and it's still unauthorized in that sense. So we have an issue here that we know that the staff complement is greater than the planned one. And we've got critical posts now being threatened and people leaving, and there's been an increase in salary in that dispensation. So this has added a huge burden now to the department to increase that salaries and a particular sector of the force. So I've got concerns that these are very, very urgent matters that need to be resolved. And it cannot just be left as unauthorized spending that is pending, and it has a huge impact on the budget itself and also going forward with, of course, the conditions of service of soldiers. The high levels of crime is reported on page 116 and on page 82 as well. There's high levels of crime reported, and I think we just like to have an idea also that the military police is working with SAPS to understand that. But what is the nature of the crime? And there were some reports, I believe that the reports have all been dealt with, and therefore we were looking forward to hear from the Oudtshoorn incident that happened, where soldiers went outside and there were some altercations, and of course there were some threats and all other things happening. What happened to that report, and is there finality on that report as well? The other one is just progress on the AMST system technique, which is 303 million. It's a contract that has been cancelled, and the department is looking for the culprit. Now, that is reported on page 144 as well, and it's acknowledged there by the Secretary of Defense. Can we actually have progress on that particular case, where that has been also a huge loss for the department? I think that will be the first round of questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. I think honorable members had ample time to ask as many questions as you can. Honorable the SecDef. I'll give you 30 minutes. We don't have time. I don't think there's going to be a second round of questions. The second round will be written questions if they are there. I'll give you 30 minutes to answer these questions. My time is 2 minutes, Pastor.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think the questions were longer than the presentations. We will definitely attempt to answer all the questions effectively. Then we'll be guided if we are not able to get maybe the follow-up of questions or time.
Sir Jeff, I think you've clustered the question very well. Some of the questions were repetition because honorable members kept on saying, as my colleague has asked, so you need to categorize them that way, and then you find that they are shorter than expected.
Thank you very much. I think that I fully agree. That will help us maybe to categorize the questions accordingly. And I will do that, Honorable Chairperson. What I will do, I'll go through all the questions, and then where we need further dig in, for whatever reasons, I will then mention the members who are sitting around here, the Inspector General, Chief Logistics CFO, as well as General Lamanzwana from the Directorate of Military Planning and Operations. So that way they will then follow up where I have not, to the questions that I have not covered. Honorable Miss addressed us to the reduction in the number of targets. That has really been due to the budget allocation. From time to time when we engage with Parliament, with National Treasury, we are told that the budget that we are giving you, you have to cut your growth according to your size according to the growth that you are giving. I will make an example. Today we have a budget a midterm review presentation. We have already received instruction from the National Treasury that we have submitted to this committee our annual performance plan for the financial year 15-16. Now we have been asked to cut on that financial year 15-16 by how much? 700 million so far? For just quick on that. It's just one cut. Yeah. So the National Treasury has already said to us that the annual performance plan that we have presented for 15-16 cut it by about 1 billion. So now we are going to come back. When we leave here, we are going out to cut down on the number of targets that we will finally say we will not be able to achieve. Thanks very much on the comment for the defense, for the borderline defense, that yes, since we have deployed, we have really, I think, done a lot to reduce, to improve the security of our borders. But the security of our borders is not exactly where we want it to be. As I indicated, we have already cut down on, if you ask me what is the target, I think as lawmakers, you definitely want to know, as of financial year 15-16, how many companies are we going to deploy? When are we going to reach 22 companies that we want? Unfortunately, because we are being told to cut down, the chances are that the target again is going to stay, we will stay 13, although we know we need 22. We are not going to be able to improve. In terms of the numbers, when we say a unit, we sometimes call it unit, sometimes we call it companies, but we can just calculate it by that a company is about 750 soldiers, correct? I'm sorry, 740, yeah, but then if you multiply, if you multiply that into, a company that we define is 140, 150, so I think we can then multiply that by four. It's 140, 150. When you call it a unit. When it comes to the litigation cases overall, I think we can cover, because it came out, the question on litigation cases came out differently. We have done an assessment of our litigation cases. to see how we're going to be dealing with this issue of litigation. The major challenge that we found, as I said, number one, environmentally speaking, is that our storage for fuel is really old now. We know that. We haven't repaired our fuel storages right across the country for many years. The fuel supply to the Department of Defense for the last 3 years has been running through a national treasury contract that we have had lots of difficulties with. We have even indicated to the national treasury that we are not keen to participate in their next tender because that contract is now finishing. But they are, I think we have a lot of pressure that we are getting from them that we must participate. We wrote numerous letters to them telling them that this contract is supposed to have included upgrade and repairs of our storage facilities, and it did not, and that sometimes even the supplies that we've been receiving have been inadequate, and there's been leakage. So there has been a lot of concern around those environmental issues that is which really lead into some litigation cases. But as I said, the fires from our training exercises also becomes a major concern to us. Then the next area of litigation is in the medical areas. I think that also affects the Department of Health, even including that you, I think we will hear from the Department of Health themselves that they have a major concern about the litigation of cases associated with various medical complications. The next category is then it will be the issue of labor relations, where we will be taken to court maybe for various labor relations related cases. And in terms of what we're doing about it is that we have now structured ourselves in such a way that we will have a team focusing on military justice. As you know, we have military justice, we have civil justice in our department. So you have a whole division that deals with all the military justice, military discipline cases. Then you have the whole division that deals with the civil litigation cases. Civil litigation case will be led by a qualified legal expert who will be then called the Chief Director, Chief Director Legal Services, CDLS, Chief Director Legal Services. We have now have the structure approved. It is going to be at the level of a Deputy Director General, and we hope that before the end of this year, this month, or whenever, we should be, because we're in the process of recruiting into that position, so that we have a one stream that deals with military justice, one stream dealing with a civilian justice, a civil case justice, and also strengthening that way our capacity to deal with the litigious cases. But more than that, that's the treatment, but the prevention of it is really compliance. Prevention of litigious cases is compliance. Medical profession to be compliant with medical standard. If you are a doctor and you treated a patient according to the approved military standards of treatment, even if a patient gets infection and complications after that, the court cannot find you guilty or liable for payment as such because you were not negligent. But if you were not compliant with approved, recognized medical standards of operations, then you'll be found guilty of negligence. And that will, therefore, the legislature has to pay. That will apply right across. Whether it's labor relations, are we compliant with our standards? When it's, the fires might be a little bit different. We need to find a way of preventing those fires that are coming up. But right across in contractual engagement, if we are compliant with the Supply Chain Management and the Public Finance Management Act, then we cannot be found guilty of these litigious cases, and therefore we should be able to prevent a number of litigious cases. So that is the whole issue around litigious cases. And the chief SANDF has instructed that those soldiers who during their training are able to acquire legal expertise by doing bachelor's degrees in law or LLBs and so forth, we should be able to utilize them in our legal services division. So we are looking at utilizing from our own reskilling of our own soldiers, but also utilizing the reserve force to bring them into the legal services division so that they can deal with those cases. The number of grievances that is high, most of our grievances have to do with promotion. When you look at the age compared to the levels of our ranks, the rank age comparison, I have asked the HR to make that presentation to the Defense Staff Council in our next Defense Staff Council on the age rank analysis of our Defense Force, because you do find that you are having a high number of people who are in this age group who are still at this level, and we are by definition a pyramid system. There can only be one general, and we can't be more than one general for the whole South African National Defense Force. So not all of us are going to become a general as a leader of them. I mean, we will end up at this level because we are a pyramidal kind of an organization. That causes a lot of strains in the system and a lot of grievances coming out for people who feel like they've been sitting at certain ranks for such a long time while they are not getting younger anymore, and therefore they set up these cases as grievances. But I can also indicate that since we have established the military ombuds office, the cases are now getting much better. I think we are beginning to resolve. I think we also, if you allow me, Chairperson, you will find that this is an annual report of the year that ended in March, and now we are already in October. So between March or January and October this year, a lot has happened, and some of these issues have already been addressed. So I will be sort of going beyond March in terms of reporting what have we done to make to address that improvement. And I might as well, while I'm at it, deal with the issues of disciplinary cases, dismissal, and all other such issues. The one advantage that we have in the Department of Defense is that, and maybe we can also deal with the corruption in the process, although specifics I will leave it to the Inspector General, is that in the Department of Defense we have military police who have internal capacity to deal with most of these non-compliance issues and as well as criminal issues. We have, and corruption, we have military police, we have defense intelligence, meaning that we can institute intelligence according to the intelligence laws of the country. We can embark on intelligence investigation according to the intelligence laws of the country. We can institute Inspector General to ensure compliance with the Defense Act and others, and we also have internal audit division that we are now trying to capacitate. With all of this internal capacity, we are then able to bring up and attend and investigate to a number of issues. We have since, as I indicated, called in the Defense Force Reserves to assist the military police in dealing with the South African police in cases that have been referred to the South African Police Services. So there is a lot of improvement in addressing the backlog of cases that have been remaining behind. When we talk about criminal cases, most of the criminal cases in our environment are theft, mostly theft. There will be others as well, alleged rapes, maybe there might be alleged assault here and there, and so forth. But most of these criminal cases have to deal with theft, which is actually theft and corruption sometimes are directly linked, and as well as corruption. I will give Inspector General at the end of this, Inspector General, if you can make note of that, just to give the members just a quick highlight after my presentation. I mean, I will I'll direct in terms of how we all respond to some of this, but make note for some more details in terms of the nature of the corruption cases. And then once we undertaken these disciplinary hearings, we dismiss, I mean, most of the people end up being dismissed. I mean, if we are found guilty, one of the charges is if it's a dismissible offense, they will be dismissed. So you will see, I would say maybe a year we dismiss about 250 people or so. On average, people that come to my desk for dismissal will be about 250 per year for actions actually that I think if we were to give details, members would agree that are actually dismissible cases, having to deal with the theft, with the if they are not criminally, once they are referred to the police, most of them end up being dismissed. And that also takes us to the issues of the suspension. Most people spend time on the suspension, and there we definitely going to need, I know the chairperson had to take a body break and so forth, but I wanted it to be noted that we will need the assistance of the lawmakers when it comes to discipline in the military. I don't know of any country that allows the soldiers to join unions, trade unions. Maybe they are, but we are among the few if they are. The issue of soldiers going on strike because the trade unions say you must go on strike is still a major issue. We are told that that is guaranteed by the Constitution. So we're going to appeal then to the lawmakers to say, isn't it time now to look at that Constitution? Because if the chief of the SNDF say deploy, and the trade union says don't deploy, go on strike, how safe are we as a country? And we all know the issue of that we're talking about, the marching to the union buildings. We all know the high number of people involved. We all know that these people have been sitting at home on suspension, and we all know that they are getting paid while they are there on suspension. And it's getting reflected, as I think Honorable Esau has indicated, as a large number of people on suspension and not paid, and therefore being that kind of the expenditure. Yes, we do have training of a number of engineers, and we have, as you know, we have had an issue whereby we had to terminate contract that we had on the engineers. We are now building the internal capacity of engineers, and we are engaging a number of strategies to absorb these learners and these engineers that we are developing in accordance to paid posts that are available, posts that are funded, that are available to the Department of Defense. When we ask about what constitutes goods and services in our budget, it's all other, it's really like operational budget and administrative costs, as it were. So issues like your telephones, your stationaries, issues, all the issues that you need for various administration travels and everything else will be categorized as goods and services. It just applies to operational costs, everything else that we do for operational costs. And the issues of steps that we are taking to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we have established right across the department what you can call AMT. You call it AMT. That is the audit management team. This audit management team cuts right across the divisions and services, and I chair that team, and we meet every month to address all the issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We put them up. We name and shame divisions that are not doing well in terms of fruitless and expenditure, and we follow them, the trends year on year, and then we also present in that a team, which is co-chaired by myself and the chief SANDF, what is to be condoned and what is not to be condoned, and the kind of investigations that needs to be undertaken and the investigations that are concluded. We take note of the need for a clean audit, and when we, from Honorable Gamete, and the issue of payment of service providers within 30 days, CFO, that will be your first question to answer. What are we doing to pay our service providers? What challenges do we have in paying our service providers within 30 days, and what are we doing about it? Now, there's also been, I think we have been asked to take members through the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which might maybe not be possible, but I will, I mean, such a short period of time. But when you look at page 2010, I will attempt to do that. We, of our report, we are talking about various details of irregular expenditure, procurement without financial authority, and people exceeding the delegation. Most of the time, when you say it's irregular, is when you find that a certain officer ended up approving expenditure beyond the delegation, because, as you know, as accounting officer, I have delegated specific amounts to various levels of management. So any given manager has authority to spend up to a certain amount. And sometimes that that manager ends up spending more than, authorizing more than what was supposed to have spent, when actually proper processes were followed, but just not a right person to spend that. And it needs to come back to me now to say that, yes, I will condone that expenditure after I've applied my mind to it and take appropriate action to ensure that that does not happen again. When you come to, like, the sourcing of aircraft, that is recorded there as irregular expenditure that for this financial year I needed to condone, was referring to the reserve force in the Air Force. We have a number of members of the reserve force in the Air Force who are now out of the Department of Defense. They were in the Air Force, but they are still in the reserve of the Air Force. It was found to be cost-effective to use them as pilots, some of them coming with their aircraft for us to be utilized. And we were under the policy that if you're in the reserve force, you can be called for any operation in the reserve force, even if that includes transporting the VIP transport. The Auditor General came in and said, this is irregular. Yes, he said, this is irregular. You must stop doing it, because each time when you use the aircraft that is outside the Air Force fleet, you must use the proper supply chain management of public bidding. So we stopped it. But I have to come here and disclose it as irregular expenditure that I have condoned. And sometimes the deviation for certain contracts happens in the joint operations deployment. And actually, there was a reason why we're using the reserve force, by the way, is because some of these guys were to be flown, were to be used for transporting the special forces. Some of them had to be used to transport some of joint operations that were operations that were not for public consumption. That I couldn't come up and say, hey, public out there, I need somebody to give me aircraft to transport special forces to such a place in Africa. No, no, no. That's why it was, we found it useful to use the Reserve Force, because the Reserve Force are still part of the vetted processes and they have the security clearance to conduct such an operation. So we're still engaged with the National Treasury as to how we best to use this kind of aircraft for the sensitive mission. I have had a question about that I needed to answer a question of a contract that was cancelled and reinstated. Of course, that is for a classified operation. It was for a military satellite, and there were issues about the nature of the contract that needed to be revised. It was revised, and that took some time to revise that contract so that it can meet the military requirements at that time. And after being revised, there was an escalation due to foreign exchange, the rand getting weaker, and that project is now clear to report that it is on track, although we can't give any further information on it. And then when it comes to 25.4, you see details of irregular expenditures, but these ones, most of them are still under investigation, Honorable Kamete. So I'm not able to give you the details blow by blow as you might have requested. But from time to time, we do come to this. We are happy to come to the committee here to report on those as conclusion gets sorted. For instance, I can report now on the non-compliance by AMSCO, the irregular expenditure there that is applied at 210 million. I think this is one of those cases that as lawmakers we might like to look into it again, take a second look into it. We are faced here with a situation whereby we have a government imperative that we have to transform our industry, that we have to improve. The country is facing such inequalities because of our past history that we have to take specific actions towards ensuring that our economy is transformed and that it's equitable in the distribution of economic benefits and wealth. So AMSCO developed an internal policy in keeping with the government imperative that they will be issuing out the tenders to companies that have, for companies to qualify, must have 25% BEE status, black-owned empowerment, in order to participate in AMSCO. And AMSCO did that because of the imperative to transform the defense industry. As we know, the defense industry in this country is not transformed at all because of its history where we come from. 20 years later, it's still not yet transformed. And AMSCO then to promote government policy, to promote government imperative, to promote government directives and policies, they instituted this that for they had their own internal policy that to participate in this bidding, you have to be 25% black empowerment. The Auditor General came in and said, no, your internal policy does not comply with the Preferential Procurement Act, which says for this kind of supply chain management, they only have to be 10% black empowered to participate. And that all the bids that we have issued under that internal policy are therefore must be disclosed as irregular expenditure. So when you, I know that most people, when they think of irregular expenditure, they think of corruption and everything. It's not corruption. It is an attempt by a state entity to promote the government of policies of black empowerment. So as lawmakers, there it is, I've disclosed it to you, it's in front of you. As irregular expenditure, now we have to condone it. Obviously, CFO, we will bring it here to Parliament and ask the Parliament to condone that because it was the internal policy at that time of AMSCO aimed at promoting the government imperatives. It's being disclosed here at the value of 210. And the sad story of it is that as of 1st of September, I have told AMSCO, stop it. Go back to 10%. And those people in the defense industry don't want to transform are so happy. I told you so. I don't know what the lawmakers think we should do about that. Yeah, there is an issue of SANDF member salary increases. I think I agree with the honorable member SAO that if you think about it, we have to look at processes we have to follow if you are increasing the salaries. If you don't have the authority, there must be an understanding that you will get an authority. And we must work very quickly to make sure that you get that authority. And what have we done now to ensure that you get this authority? Well, what happened here was that during that financial year, the Public Service Administration issued an order for all the civil servants to get an increase of the inflation-related increase. I think it was plus 0.5%, if not inflation-related. So this was approved, and according to the GPSA Public Service Act, as well as according to the PFMA, once the ministry in the public service issues that increase to the public servants, all public servants get that increase. And the understanding we have is that for the soldiers, as long as that the increase of the soldiers is in line with that public servants increase, then it is acceptable. All you have to do, the minister can approve that and get with the concurrence of the minister of National Treasury. So during this process, since that's the general understanding, since the increase that was given to the soldiers was the same as the increase given to all other public servants, it was instituted while we were waiting for the concurrence of the minister in the National Treasury. Needless to say, of course, in the process, there might have been change of administration or maybe the paperwork did not fall into... The paperwork did not fall into line to be approved before it was instituted. By the time it was instituted, it was found that we have that concurrence has not happened. But I'm happy to report that that concurrence by the Minister of Finance has now been obtained. We do have a letter from the Minister of Finance that the increase that was instituted for the SANDF members in the amount of 1 billion as instituted here has now been corrected. So that action has been corrected. We might as well put it as being condoned by National Treasury. So I would say then with all our disclosures of irregular expenditure that has been condoned and irregular investigation under that is still irregular expenditure that is still under investigation, it's hard to pronounce on those that are still under investigation. But from time to time, we are happy to come to the portfolio committee to tell where we are on a case-by-case basis, and the CFO maybe will go into detail with some of them. When it comes to the training that is not reached, I think, as we've indicated, it's because the members at that given point in time are deployed in other operations and other missions. Therefore, it is hard for them to take up at that given point in time. And that also will apply to their leaves. If you see us paying out so much leave, is that when the leave comes, sometimes as Secretary for Defense, I have to withdraw the application for the leave or maybe call back the members of the Department of Defense who are already on leave. For instance, if you think about the deployment that we have overseas, I mean outside the country, and the deployment internally into the borders, into peacekeeping operations, and as well as into support. Right now, tomorrow, the Ministry of Police will be launching the safety the festive season safety program or campaign, and the defense force might have to be deployed in support of the police. Everybody wanted to take, most people wanted to take leave for this period. I would have to recall them from taking leave. But at the same time, I fully agree that we have to manage it effectively, see whether is there any other time that they can take leave than when they actually wanted to take leave. Although I must indicate that I'm managing that very closely now, that I'm not just going to pay out leaves without proper motivation and justification, that in such a given period of time, over the period of 18 months, a certain member was definitely not able to take leave in that period. I think there is the issue about sourcing of aircraft that indicated that we were sourcing from the reserve force, and then the jets for the president. It was out there in the media, although it's not in the annual report, that the president is using a chartered aircraft. Of course, we should know that when the presidential jet is out for service and the president needs to travel, it is the responsibility of the Air Force to hire an aircraft. And these aircrafts for president, we usually hire it through the National Treasury tender. There is a transversal tender of National Treasury. We use it, whatever aircraft that is available, the Air Force hires that jet using the National Treasury tender. So there was nothing non-compliant about it. Everything was compliant as far as that action was concerned. And this issue, I think, of compliance, I think, will also apply to the issue, I think, that's raised by Honorable Menier in terms of the Auditor General was here last week saying that he has asked for information from the Department of Defense and Navy as an accounting officer. I was giving information about the former minister who was flying on the usage of jets deemed by the former minister of defense. All I can say is that we have our annual report here, 13-14. We have never had any audit query from the Auditor General about use of jets by the former minister. And in any way, I don't know, Honorable Menier, you say that might have been embarrassed. What would have been embarrassed about it? Because there was nothing irregular about it, about the usage. There was nothing non-compliant about it. That usage was compliant with the Principles of Defense Act and the TFMA. If there was any irregular action or non-compliance with any prescriptions of regulatory framework, Auditor General would have raised an audit query with us. He hasn't raised any audit query. So I don't think there was anything that was non-compliance if you talk about compliance.
Could I just ask a question of clarity? This is very important. Could I just ask a question of clarity? I just want to be clear. The Secretary of Defense says that there has been no audit query. That is technical language. My question was different. I requested the Auditor General to conduct an audit on the former minister's flights on Gulfstream jets. The Auditor General informed me that they had requested the Department of Defense to provide them with the documents, and after scrutinizing the documents, would make a decision about whether to proceed with the audit. My question, therefore, is, did the Auditor General request the documents? Were those documents handed to the Auditor General? Because I just want you to be clear, because we don't want to get into a situation where there's a perception that somebody's lying. Thank you.
You have 5 minutes to answer all the questions, but my understanding is that you can't answer all of them. I gave you 45 minutes already. I don't want to take the Honorable Member's lunch time because there's also a sitting. If you can
wrap that one. We still have to give you feedback on the workshop quickly. If we can wrap that one, and any other question, you should provide written responses to us.
I have to consult with my CFO because as I've indicated, I mean he's really the entry point for all the audit queries that we get, and he shall give the CFO to answer this particular question. Then after that, all the remaining questions that we have not answered, I'll be happy to put them in writing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I need to state that from the AG side, we are having a meeting with the AG on a monthly basis. There is at no stage where we receive the request of that particular information, as far as we know. Because we are having a meeting, we never received anything until that. But, Chairperson, before I hear what the Secretary for Defense. But I need to clarify something, because for the committee to understand as well about what was asked by Honorable Member Issao in terms of the unauthorized expenditure. The department, the police of the department, you cannot spend what you don't have. That's that. I need to clarify that one. In terms, the last time the department had the unauthorized expenditure, it was a long time ago. We never had any unauthorized expenditure. We must also understand that this, the framework of the financial statement, is designed by the National Treasury. It's coming from them. We need to slot the figure accordingly. The one that you've seen here, as it shows that it's zero. But we don't have it. We never had it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Maybe just to highlight that I am aware that the Auditor General has written about this request for information, but it was really directed to the Ministry. So I still have to follow up and see as to how is that information managed in terms of the department. Pardon? No, the letter. I'm aware of a letter from the Auditor General on this issue.
So you make a follow-up. Thank you very much. That, Honorable Members, brings us to the end of this presentation. Any remaining question should be... Any remaining question should be answered in a written response. Not later than Tuesday, 28th of October, because we want to factor everything in the BRRR report that is going to be adopted on the 29th. Will that be in order, sir? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Honorable Chairperson, yes, that will be in order.
Thank you very much. You may be released, and we are going to go. If you can quietly just file out. And then meanwhile, that we should go back to honorable members and give you a feedback. Progress so far on the preparation of the workshop. I think that will be the logistic progress. Mm-hmm.